Chapter 6. The sad thing was that Ori Tenro didn't even present a challenge. There was no elaborate setup required, no ampule slipped into a fancy drink, no poison-impregnated clothing in a box with tissue. Her approach served as his final test, and he failed brilliantly. Basine merely walked up behind him, put a warm hand on his shoulder, and stabbed the syringe into his buttock.
"Hey!"
was all he managed before falling face down on the ground. If he'd been a spy, if he'd had any real training other than Clodagh using him as a punching bag, he wouldn't have let her get a needle into his flesh, much less given her time to depress the plunger. "Sorry, partner," she said, arranging him flat on his back, "but this next part is a one-woman job." She checked his vital signs before leaving the ship and locking him safely within. Just as she'd promised him would happen to anyone who dared to kiss her black-painted lips, Ori would sleep for half a day at least and wake up feeling dizzy and nauseated, as if he had the worst hangover of his life. It was her favorite poison for good reason. It generally left the victim incapable of chasing her. Her first order of business was suiting up for an unpredictable mission. She wanted clean, and this job was turning out to be anything but. Without knowing what she was up against, she did her best to pack all her favorite weapons and gadgets, now with the addition of her sensor-jamming new shirt. Whatever was going on at Facility 48, there would be no record of a woman known as Basine Nital infiltrating the building. Just a wavering blur where she'd been. So Ori was good for two things, then. Maybe she'd let him live after all. Her next stop was to steal a two-seater land speeder from a vast parking garage. All too easy when the owner had left the gate ticket on the passenger seat. The attendant waved to the beautiful woman with her bouncy blonde hair, and then when she was out of sight, Basine tossed off her wig and sped toward the edge of town and the coordinates she'd long ago memorized after destroying Ori's flimsyplast notes. The poor fool didn't even understand how dangerous it was to leave records behind. The farther Basine's speeder got from the city, the quieter and more beautiful the planet became. Idyllic, even. Long swaths of ornamental graveled road linked sprawling retirement facilities and med centers surrounded by lushly manicured grounds. There were no crops or farms. Vashka was reserved for sentient beings and largely absent of industry and agriculture in an effort to keep the climate and ecosystem pristine. The planet's original megafauna had been cleared out to ensure the safety of its new inhabitants, although the giant ferns, sunburst flowers, and swaying palms had been allowed to flourish, albeit in neat rows. A big waste of meat and leather, in Basine's opinion. But the lack of traffic and witnesses made her job easier, so she wouldn't complain. The coordinates were farther out than she'd anticipated, and Basine hadn't passed a building in hours by the time she neared what had once been Vashka Valley Retirement Facility 48. While she'd been expecting just another New Republic building, all soft lines and gleaming windows, what she saw were jagged peaks and a strange, castle-like form rising over the next hill. She stopped the speeder at the crest and looked down into the valley. It wasn't often she was surprised and perplexed, but Facility 48 looked altogether wrong, shining a strange, warm gold in the afternoon's sunlight. When she tracked movement to one side, she realized why. The building had been colonized. It wasn't a government center anymore. It was a hive. Up close, she recognized the giant insects busily buzzing around their stolen home. Vashkin Apodactyls, one of the original megafauna inhabitants of the warm planet. When she'd scanned the Sparrowhawk's datapad for intel on Vashka, Apodactyls, or Dax, had been listed on the safety concerns page for visiting tourists. No matter what the New Republic did, no matter which poisons they spread or how many hives they burned, they couldn't completely eradicate the primitive insectoid beasts. The Apodactyls weren't exactly friendly, They were the size of a small humanoid, coated in armor-like chitin, and blessed with two sets of wings and venomous stingers. No wonder the retirement facility had closed. Bazine left her speeder concealed under a fallen palm tree, plucked one of its giant fronds to use as camouflage, and crept toward the towering hive. The front doors were open, and being used by insects bustling in and out in two endless lines. Most of the building had been coated with heavy golden wax that glowed almost translucent in the sun. Hexagonal cells cloaked the corners and roof, piling upward to partially melted points. What once had been windows were firmly sealed. Getting in would not be easy. But she wasn't going to leave without finding out what had happened to Jor Tribulus and that steel case. Ori had said the data servers would be well protected, and she had to hope he was right. Her quarry's trail was cold. At each of the building's four corners, a gigantic pile of trash was neatly stacked, and Bazine ran for the shadow of the nearest one. Up close, she saw a hodgepodge of humanoid detritus, including chairs, keyboards, and droids, all mixed up with chunks of browned wax, bits of sodden white fluff, and the yellow and black striped sawtooth legs and mandibles of generations of dead Dax. A loud hum jerked her attention away from the building and toward one of the insects, zooming straight toward her and clutching an empty eggshell the size of a sleeping bag in its mandibles. Bazine froze, holding the palm frond to block her body, wishing she knew more about how these creatures viewed the world and whether they would see her as an enemy, a food source, or a mere inconvenience. Experience had taught her that it was usually one of the first two. The Apodactyl fortunately didn't notice her, but Bazine had a brief chance to study its physiognomy as it carefully fit the eggshell into the puzzle of garbage and flew off. Her conclusion was that the Dax were flying death machines, and she wanted to get into and out of the building as quickly as possible without getting close to another one. She couldn't remember if such creatures saw more clearly during the day or at night, or if they had any sense of smell. And when she tried to pull up info on her datapad, she found only a cheerful entry on uses for honey and wax. Forced to choose between facing the creatures by light of day or in the dark, where it was possible they'd have the advantage even with her night vision goggles, she chose day. A pitch-black hive full of killer bugs did not appeal. What she needed was a distraction. Kicking up one foot, Bazine flicked the catch that released the thermal detonator cradled in the high wedge heel of her boot. She thumbed the button, reared back, and hurled the metal sphere toward an outcropping of glistening wax on the front side of the building. Just as she'd hoped, the blast radius created a gaping spherical hole that dripped honey and brought the entire hive of angry apodactyls scurrying from every angle in a writhing mass of berserk black and yellow. The moment the front door was clear, she dropped the palm frond and ran, dived through, and rolled to her knees, finally inside the last known home of TK-1472. The eerie silence inside the gold-tinged building wouldn't last, which meant Bazine didn't have much time. She took her bearings amid the ruins of a lobby filled with smooth plastic chairs and jogged to the remains of a front desk. Anything that could be carried away by sentient beings or insects had been. Only the furniture firmly bolted to the floor and wall remained. The comp screens had all been broken, and gray glass littered the desk. She'd hoped to find a map or logbook, but everything appeared to be digital, which meant there was no way for her to get into the system. For just a moment, she wished she'd brought Ori. But then she imagined a chittering Dak catching the back of his vest and lifting him screaming into the air. They were better off with him sleeping on the Sparrowhawk. Bazine had expected to sneak through the darkened halls of a simple retirement facility, jamming the cam feeds as she hunted for Tribulus and passed unnoticed among the staff and patients. She was trained to deal with sentient creatures, whether through deception or force. But she knew nothing of giant bugs, and barely more than that about coaxing data out of broken computers. If the hologram in Sully's cantina had mentioned a hive of apodactyls, she would have walked away from the job. Ori had told her that data servers were often stored in an underground room, ostensibly so their records would be difficult for outsiders to access and safe from any weather or fire issues. That was her goal. Get to the data room, find a way to boot up the servers, hope there was an unbroken screen and keyboard, and poke around for what she needed. If nothing else, she would pull the data chips and take them back to the ship for Ori to manipulate with his slicing skills. All they needed to know was when TK-1472 had been evacuated, where he'd been sent, where he was from, or where he was buried. Child's play, she hoped. It was kind of funny how Ori had wanted to learn true spycraft, never realizing that most of it had to do with keeping a cool head at a time like this when the job went south. She needed his skills as much as her own right now. She checked that the front doors were still empty before bolting down the single hallway. Her heart pounded, her boots skittering over ripped carpet and palm-sized chunks of wax as she hurried past open doors that revealed rooms filled with hexagonal cells. Everything was tinted the same warm golden yellow, and a sickly sweet scent rode the still air. Basine felt as if she were running in slow motion past endless doors full of endless cells. Realizing too late that the hallway took a sharp turn up ahead, she nearly ran into another wall of the meter-wide, tightly packed cells. Face to face with one of the chambers, she put a hand to the partially translucent wax. When it pulsated against her palm, she jumped back, just as a hideous white grub pushed up against it, the wax bellying out under its bulk, and its alien black eyes roving as if seeking her out. That just made her run faster. The next hallway was darker. This side of the building faced away from the sun. Basine had goggles and a headlamp and flares, but she didn't want to attract the attention of the Dax, so she'd keep going until she ran out of light. This hall looked more like rooms or dormitories for the retirees, each door marked with a number, some with last names rendered unreadable by a coating of wax. Rails were bolted to the walls, and she passed a series of horrible landscape paintings, broken up only by a rusted laundry chute. Just ahead, she saw a closed door marked stairs. As Basine picked up speed and ran toward the stairs, a fully grown apodactyl exited one of the open doors, wings buzzing inquisitively, and turned to face her. Immediately she knew. Whatever the creature saw, it wasn't good. Its buzzing took on a dark, aggressive tone, and it barely paused before flashing mandibles and flying right for her. Spinning away from the door, she ran back down the hall. Dozens of Dax were returning through the front doors, their heads cocked toward her as they heard either her footsteps or the angry buzz pursuing her. With little choice, she yanked open the laundry chute and swung into it feet first, not knowing what she would find at the bottom.